Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. We're coming live this morning from Mobile. Boy, what a great day. You know, listen, I got to start off this way. I got to start off as I too often do. I will admit, I too often do this by talking about the vegetables. They're very exciting right now. Boy, did they ever grow. Boy, am I looking forward to eating all of the things I got in my garden right now. I've got two kinds of collards. I got this yellow collard that I'm trying this year, and I've got a bunch of kale. The kale just, I mean, you know, after when this cool weather started and after it got that bit of rain, it's like the kale just tripled in size in about 3 days. It was the most amazing thing I've ever seen. The broccoli's up. It's going to be ready for Thanksgiving, I think. It's just amazing. It's amazing how the vegetable garden's growing, and I'm not going to be able not to talk about that because, boy, the satsumas are coming in, and all of these great food crops are coming in. The persimmons, I'm still eating the persimmons. I had basil last night for supper with a little bit of arugula that's coming up. Great. So I know I'm talking about all of this food stuff, all of this great food stuff, because being human, we eat, and we like to eat things, and boy, is it sure nice to have a garden where you're getting to eat things like that, really fresh out of the garden. And really, just almost everything I'm eating now is coming out of the garden. It's just that time of year. But, you know, I'm working around the yard. I got a lot of work to do. It's that time of year. I got a lot of new stuff to put in. I'm kind of excited about it. I got stuff to divide and move around. And I'm doing that. And there's a painter next door who's been throwing his paint all over my plants. It's all right, but he's eating a sandwich, and he decides to say, you know, you're just like my mother. She said she loved flowers. She'd have flowers absolutely everywhere. There wouldn't be a space that there wasn't flowers. And she said, you know, I'm going to get me a plot. I got a plot up there, and I'm going to put 20 acres in, and I'm going to grow stuff. I said, what are you going to grow? He said, well, I don't know. I'm going to grow everything. So that's what he said. He said, I'm a farmer. He said, but the only stuff that I can eat is what I'm going to grow. He said, I'm not going to have any of this flower stuff. So I'm thinking, you know, what's wrong with the flowers? Is there something wrong with the flowers? Is it wrong that David P. and I both like flowers? You know, I don't think it's so wrong. It's not so wrong at all. Particularly this time of year, because let me tell you what's happening. It's just amazing. I mean, everything that's been sitting there all year long, and people have been wondering, what is that big stalking thing in his garden? And why is it just it's nothing but green all year long? And then this time of year, oh my goodness, it is unbelievable. The salvias, my friends, the salvias are just going crazy. Now, there's a lot of different kinds of salvias out there. Salvia is one of these great things, that these big genus of things. There are a lot of them from different places. But there's a whole bunch of fall blooming salvias that you don't hear about that much. Because up there in Atlanta, and certainly in New England, and certainly in North Carolina, and certainly in Connecticut and Michigan, and all of those places where they write about how to grow a garden, and you believe that's the center of the gardening world, in all of those places, they can't enjoy these kinds of salvias because they bloom very late in the year. They're like poinsettias. They're like David's melaton. They don't start blooming until the days get short. And in most of the world, when the days get short, at least most of the temperate world that you read about, when the days get short, you know what happens? It freezes. So they're already starting to freeze in most places. We've got another, how long have we got? We got another month and a half before it freezes. Certainly before it freezes hard. And so I'm going to have all these incredible flowers just going on and on and on and on. It's like it's the best time of year for flowering. So this beautiful Salvia purpurea, it's beginning to bloom. It is unbelievable how many blooms there are right now. It is covered up. My black belt aster, Salvia purpurea is from Central America. But my black belt aster, It's just now. It's at its peak. It's unbelievable how much it's blooming. It's one of the most beautiful things. It's an incredible native aster, native to Alabama. I've got it's crazy how many different things right now are taking off in my garden. The tithonias are blooming. The poinsettias, of course, that if you set your poinsettias out, they're beginning to bloom now too. It's this great season of bloom. The roses, I got to say this about the roses. You know, every year I've got this rose. It is so big. It is so gangly. And I just say, oh, I can't. So I cut it back really hard this year, thinking I'm going to take the whole thing out. And it's one of these old-fashioned 19th century roses. And it just shot out blooms all over the place. It's the most unbelievable color in fall. That's the thing about fall, is the color is so good, the temperatures are so good. It is the most unbelievable time of bloom. And so let me say, yeah, I like flowers. You want to fight about it? It's a really nice thing, liking flowers. It's a really cool thing, liking flowers. And I like the flowers as much as the vegetables. There's an interesting advantage, too. And I'm going to talk about flowers in the garden because there's a lot of advantage. A lot of people have problems, for example, with pollination. And I think about why would they have problems with pollination? I don't have problems with pollination. I don't have – if I've got squash, I don't really have a problem with that squash getting pollinated. There's plenty of bumblebees. There's plenty of bees. And they're saying, well, I don't have any bees. I don't have any bumblebees. I'm not getting pollinated. And then I think about the yard, and I see the yards, and here's what happens. The only thing blooming in that yard is the squash. There's no other flowers. There's nothing to attract bumblebees. There's nothing to attract bees or butterflies or other pollinators. There's nothing to attract, you know, I'm going to say this out loud because you don't recognize this, but you should, and I want you not to flinch when I say it. There's no wasp, and wasps are really important pollinators. And not only that, the thing I really love about wasp is that they chomp down on worms like nobody's business. I mean, they are one of the best. They have kept my beans producing because they are so aggressive about getting the bean, the bean worm, whatever you call them. They're really incredibly good at this. And so all of these insects that are part of this garden are an important thing about the flowers. It's a nice part of things to have. Plus, you get the birds. Plus, you know, I know you don't believe in this, but it's really nice to have pretty things. Sometimes it's really nice to have things blooming that look good. And why do we think flowers look good? Well, I'll tell you why we think flowers look good, because flowers want us to think they look good. They have done this to appeal to other species, and we're one of the species that they've appealed to over the years. So they're putting on something pretty just because... in this long relationship they've had with humans, just because they know it makes us happy and we're going to move them around. That's how it works. That's how it works for a lot of plants. It's a great season for flowers here on the Gulf Coast. It's a great season for vegetables. It's a great season for both. Let's talk about that this morning. Let's talk about some of the stuff I'm putting out for next year. I'm kind of excited about it. It's just a great time of the year to be in the garden. Great time to be gardening. I have the interesting thing about my success with vegetables and other things, this time of year, everything succeeds. Everything does great. Everything does beautiful, and it makes you wish you had planted more. And I'm in the vegetable garden. I'm thinking, gosh, I wish I had planted more of that. And the nasturtiums are coming up over here, and I'm thinking, boy, I wish I had planted more of those. Is it too late? No, it's not too late. We're going to talk about what to do now. We're going to talk about what's right, what we can do to get the garden going so that we have more for this great season of gardening that's going to go on. Look, folks, it's going to go on all winter long. That's right. It's going to happen all winter. We're going to have flowers all winter long. That's the way it is here on the Gulf Coast. Right into spring, we're going to talk about how to take advantage of that, but feel free to give us a call. 343-0106-251, 343-0106 if you're out of the area. We're gonna have a great time talking this morning, so give us a call. 251-343-0106.
I was raised in the country, that's a natural fact. Food on the table from the garden out back. Everyone working to make the land their own. Red clay cracking where the silver queen grows. Running with your cousins from yard to yard. The living was easy, but the playing was hard. Didn't have much, nothing comes for free. All you needed was your family. I am a country girl.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
All right, welcome back. It is a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. I had a lot of things to think about. It's Charlie's asked me a lot of questions this morning. And
can I ask the one?
Yeah, just go ahead. Go ahead and ask.
You know, and it's camellias, I think it is, the bright red flowers that look sort of like roses, and they bloom in December and January. And my question was, in the heart of winter, when there aren't a lot of insects around, how do those plants get pollinated?
Well, so here's the interesting story about camellias, folks. Why do camellias bloom in winter? And they do generally bloom in winter.
Beautiful.
Some of them bloom in fall,
blooms.
Some of them bloom in winter, and some into early spring. But many of them bloom in the middle of winter. And why would they do that? Well, camellias are from, at least the camellias that bloom in winter, are from Japan. And there was a particular problem that camellias had, and let me tell you something, because we fail to think about this. We don't think about this. This is why plants look like they do. This camellias in the wild are generally red. We have a lot of other colors because we fiddled with camellias. We've turned them all sorts of colors. We fluffed up the blooms, which is its own issue. But in the wild, most camellias were red. And what does that tell you? Well, let me tell you something about red. Insects don't see red that well. Now, isn't that interesting? What sees red well? Well, turtles see red very well.
Some birds.
People see red very well. Birds see red extraordinarily well, particularly in the spectrum that these things do. So these camellias were living far apart in the mountains of it's one of the issues of being a camellia in Japan was you were in these mountains and you were really far apart. One camellia was far apart from another. So if you wanted good cross-pollination, you didn't want just a little old bee that was just going to travel 100 yards and deposit its pollen. You needed something that really carried pollen a long distance. So over time, there's a scientific word for it, but we won't talk about that. They negotiated an agreement, these plants did, with insects and birds. And what they did was they said the plants that were most successful at reproducing were the plants that had red flowers in winter that attracted birds at a time when insects weren't available for pollination, because the insects just... So there was a specific bird association between birds and the camellias, and that's how it got pollinated. And this bird, its primary business is pollinating camellias. Now, there's a couple of issues with that here. It's kind of interesting, isn't it? So camellias decided, long-distance pollination, I'm going to be red, I'm going to bloom in winter, I'm going to track birds, not insects. Boom. There it is. Smart move. In here, in the United States, the bird that pollinates camellias in Japan isn't here. It doesn't exist here. And we don't have many birds that are exclusively focused on camellias. So one of the interesting problems in the U.S. is that pollination of camellias is not that good here. Of the winter blooming camellias, of the red camellias, you'll notice that there's very few seeds produced.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the reasons. There's another reason why seeds aren't produced, and that is that we've fiddled with the flowers to the point that even if there was a bird, they couldn't possibly find the operating parts of the flower anymore. They're buried under petals. Or we've changed what the stamens and the pistils and other things, stamens mostly, into petals so that the plants can't be pollinated anyway. We've fiddled with them to make them look pretty. And the only way those plants, Charlie, the only way those plants never get pollinated. So how do we have more plants?
I guess you'd have to grow them.
Well, and you grow them because plants do something people don't. That is, they reproduce themselves asexually without sex. It's apomixis. It's not apomixis. It's actually just vegetative reproduction. So you can take a cutting, you can take a root cutting, you can take a leaf cutting, and you can reproduce the entire plant from that cutting. You can't do that by cutting your finger off and putting it in the dirt, right?
Right.
We haven't figured out how to clone people, but plants have been cloning themselves for a long time. So there's the story. That's a quick little lesson in a lot of things.
I wonder, and that brings up something else, Bill. I'm watching you doing all the hand gestures and everything when you're asking the question. Is there any possibility that there might be some plans for another class?
I know we don't have a class scheduled, and I don't know when we'll do those classes again, but that's an interesting question.
Because I know there's a lot of people that would love to sign up.
We don't have those classes scheduled. Maybe it's something I'll think about. I've got a lot of projects this spring.
Yeah, we'll see. You're a busy man right now.
We'll see. Listen, Satsumas, interesting question about Satsumas. I'm interested to see. I don't think this is – I think there are going to be a good number of Satsumas out there. I don't think it's going to be a bumper crop, but it's going to be a good number of Satsumas. If John Olive is right, and if some of the experts on what makes Satsumas really good are correct – this may not be the best year for Satsumas. The flavor may not be quite up to snuff. Now, I'm interested. I have actually tried some Satsumas early on, and I tried some yesterday. Yow! They are not good right now. And it's an interesting thing because it's one of these little small shifts in climate that if it persists, we've got a problem because there is a thought that it is the cool temperatures that happen, and it just barely cool, but cools down. The cool down in late August and early September is really important to the development of flavor in Satsumas. And we didn't have that this year. We didn't have it at all. There wasn't a cool down. So it's going to be an interesting year to experiment. However, we've got the cool down now. It looks like it's going to persist for a while. It's warming up today, but it'll be cool again. So we have a long. So it'll be interesting to see. I would suspect that at the very least, the flavor of Satsumas is going to develop very late this year, later than normal perhaps. So we'll see, and it's something to watch for, and I'm interested in your observation. I had a question about when is the best time to plant citrus trees. Not now. Everything else, and I hate to say this because then you think it applies to anything else, but really it only applies to a few subtropical plants like citrus. Now is not the time to plant citrus. Anything else, you can plant a lawn, you can plant your camellias, you can plant azaleas, you can plant vegetables, you can plant you can plant flowers, you can plant shrubs of every description, but do not plant your citrus right now. And the reason is that citrus needs some time to get in the ground and harden off before cold. This will not happen. It won't happen for a lot of reasons. If you plant them now, and if we have even a minor cold spell, they could be damaged. It's best to let your citrus, it's best to plant them in spring. It's best to plant them in spring, and I mean early spring. Early spring is great. February, March, as long as they've been acclimated outside a little bit, they're going to be fine. February and March, don't wait till April, but February, March, a perfect time to plant citrus. You can wait till April if you need to. But they're the one plant that I wouldn't plant right now. Boy, we're getting lots of messages from different folks about different things. Ooh, goodness gracious, some beautiful pictures of jam, some beautiful pictures of flowers. some questions. Tony on Fowl River is asking me what flowers, what plants will produce flowers or color for winter in Mobile. And I would say, Tony, one of the good places to go to see that, and one of the places we've learned from and been able to learn with, is Bell and Grath Gardens. They do a good job of planting winter flowers. They do a great job of putting things out. Some of them are hard to reproduce in your garden, but listen, here's just in terms of just pure flowers, let me tell you, and it can be hard to find some of them, but Sweet William, dianthus are a great thing. If you can find dianthus, they will bloom for you all winter long. There are some varieties that are prone to fungus in humid conditions. That's the only thing, but there are many varieties that aren't, and they will bloom for you all year. Foxgloves. Tony, where you are, foxgloves ought to be blooming all winter long. I love foxgloves. Pansies bloom all winter long for us. They're really great. Go ahead and get them out. So listen, there's three good ones. Dianthus, pansies, foxgloves. Not foxgloves, snapdragons. Excuse me, snapdragons. You see how I got them mixed up, right? No, you don't. Snapdragons, really great thing to have this time of year. Snapdragons, pansies, dianthus, delphinium, if you can find them. They will bloom all winter long, particularly the dwarf delphiniums. They're really great. They're perfect. I love delphiniums. It's sometimes hard to find them. We worked with the botanical gardens to make them available at one point. We need to do that again because they do so well for us. If you can find dianthus this time of year, they do really, really good. There's pot marigolds, calendulas, pot marigolds. These are not regular marigolds. They're not related to pot. They're not related to marigolds. They're different. They're pot marigolds because they grow well in containers. Calendulas are great all winter long. Beautiful flowers, incredible range of flowers, something we can do. Hey, listen, I'm not finished yet. You can't stop me. I got a bunch more plants to name. But we're going to do it as soon as I come back.
Hotter weather in the country. Hotter weather down south. Hotter weather in the Delta. Hotter food tastes in your mouth.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Okay, folks. Listen, Tony, are you listening? Are you writing all this down? So let me start again. Flowers for winter that you can plant. Besides camellias, besides edgeworthia, besides a lot of shrubs that bloom, there's so many things I can't talk about them all. You know that. But let me talk about some annuals that you can plant that will bloom during winter. So, again, pansies are great. Snapdragons are great. Sweet William, dianthus are great. Delphiniums are great. Calendulas, pot marigolds are great. They're real. All five of those. It's hard because a lot of these plants don't do as well farther north. They're not in the nursery trade, and you have to grow them yourself. But snapdragons you can do. Pansies, dianthus are out there. I'm beginning to grow these from seed, and we can talk about that a little later. We've got a lot of things going on. But there's a lot of things that you can do from seed that are very easy. And calendulas are one, and it's probably not too. Nasturtiums are another great thing for winter. There's a little trick with nasturtiums. I grow them in containers. I love nasturtiums. I grow them in containers, or I grow them in a very protected place because they love cool temperatures. They love winter. They will bloom all winter long until it gets down to around 31 degrees. They can get right down to 32, but boy, they hate it when it gets below 32. They really don't have the temperament to deal with that. But nasturtiums are great too. There's a lot of other colorful things, and I just one of the things you can do is go to Bungrath. You'll see this is they're using mustard greens that are from Japan that are this beautiful garnet red color, this incredible color in the leaves. And these big mustard plants are just stunning. They're absolutely stunning in the landscape. They're using them ornamentally. They're using them in containers at Bellingrath. They've been doing it in the past. I don't know. I think Bill's retiring. I don't know what they're doing this year, but they've done it in the past. It's really beautiful. There's lots of kale, and some of the edible kale, to me, is the prettiest kale of all. Red Russian kale is just absolutely beautiful. You can eat it. The trouble is it's so pretty sometimes you don't want to eat it because it's so pretty you don't want to pick it, but it is absolutely beautiful. It's really great. So there's a lot of colors. Lettuce. And listen, there's a lot of lettuce that are being grown right now simply because they look so good. Lettuce survives for you all winter long. Tony, I hope you wrote all this down because it's good stuff, man. These are good plants. Kurt, I'm listening. You there, Kurt? Kurt.
I think he just hung up.
Kurt. Oh, that's too bad. Well, Kurt, let's try again. So Kurt sent me a picture of a pindo palm and a jelly palm, and it's something we'll try to figure out. Maybe he's coming back. Maybe he just got lost. Listen, while Kurt's coming back on, I think that's probably Kurt. Somebody sent me a picture of a camellia. We talked about camellias, and yes, indeed, bees will attend to this at some during warm spells, but the pollination rate is not that great. It's not as good as this. That's why you get some pollination, but not as good as if there were birds. And plus we've fiddled with the flowers so much. But yes, here's a camellia that it's a Sasanqua actually, slightly a close relative that has a seed on it. That came from one of the flowers being pollinated. That's what you've got. Somebody sent me a picture of that. That is a seed. You can take that seed off and plant it. Kurt, let's try this again.
Yes, I'm sorry about that, Bill. How are you this morning?
Good. How are you?
Fine, thanks. I don't know if you saw that picture of a pindo that I texted in a few minutes ago.
I did.
Okay, and I just wondered, obviously there's some leaves on there that need to be trimmed, should have been trimmed. I wonder if we've got anything more going on. Is now the right time to do it? Shall I wait till spring, or just your thoughts?
Yeah, well, so you mean the leaves that, you know, and I'll tell you the truth, from the palm's perspective, it's perfectly happy. It doesn't need you to do a thing to it. It is perfectly happy. If a lot of pruning that we do to plants, and I try to stress this, we prune plants to make us happy, not to make the plants happy.
Okay, sure.
The plants actually are just as happy never to be pruned, and in most cases. And there's some exceptions when trees split apart and things like that. But these are mostly about us. It ain't about the palm being happy. That palm is perfectly happy. Leaves start browning out on palms when the leaves get older. If there's any green left on the leaf, it's still actually doing some work. So there's no need to hurry to take it off. But if the brown bothers you, you could cut it off. And if the leaf is entirely brown, it will have zero impact on that palm at all. You can do it any time of year you want. Doesn't matter. I wouldn't cut off a lot of green leaves this time of year. Certainly, never would I cut off a lot of green leaves from a palm, but you certainly wouldn't want to do it this time of year. It will actually reduce its hardiness. But it's looking good. Has it produced any fruit yet?
No, it's not that old yet, really. But no fruit yet.
Yeah, yeah. And it will, but it's a good looking palm. It just keeps, you know. So the trick with pindo palms, which in the old days we called jelly palms, which was kind of the old Gulf Coast name because people love the fruits. People didn't get all of their stuff from Winn-Dixie and Whole Foods. They actually went out in the yard and got their food, and they loved this palm. It was called jelly palm. The fruit was delicious. They made great jelly palm jelly, David, I'm going to talk about that persimmon jelly here in just a minute, but the jelly, palm jelly, was really good. The trick with jelly palms is that they don't produce a tall trunk. And that may seem like an okay thing, particularly if you're going to collect the fruit. That's nice. But it can be, as you're probably beginning to discover, you got to walk around it a lot. And so you find yourself walking to one part in the yard and you said, ooh, I got to walk around that dadgum jelly palm because it spreads so wide and it puts the leaves way out. So you can judiciously prune those bottom leaves off just to make it a little easier to walk around. And again, it's not about making the palm happy. It's about making you happy. And as long as you leave most of the leaves, you're fine to do that. So prune off some of the bottom leaves just so you can make it easier to walk around. But it's looking good.
Thank you, Bill.
You're welcome, Kurt. Jelly palms. I'm glad Kurt's doing that. You know, we have forgotten. It's so funny, and we're still stuck on apples. And I went to a nursery in Central Alabama, where I love the nursery. It's a great place, and I noticed how many apple cultivars there were, and how many few cultivars there were of other things that weren't a pain in the patootie. Apples are a traditionally European thing. Can you grow apples on the Gulf Coast? Yes. Do you want to grow apples on the Gulf Coast? Well, that's a much harder question because they don't taste that good. They're not that good. They have tons of problems. They get cedar apple rust like crazy. They look ugly. The fruit gets terribly deformed. You would have to spray the fool out of that thing to get it to produce anything like a normal fruit, and then it's still not going to taste that good. And there's nothing wrong with that because, man, most of the world that grows apples, they don't have a clue what satsumas taste like. They don't have a clue. They have no idea how good satsumas are. They have no idea how good some of our persimmons are. They have no idea how good pindo palms, jelly palms, really are. So, any rate, it's an interesting thing. I'm glad we're doing the pindo palms. It's a really nice thing to have. What else we got? I've got pictures of, oh gosh, I got a picture of a jelly palm from Greg. And Greg, you must have taken this earlier in the year, but man, is it, when those things get loaded down with fruit, Greg, they are unbelievable, aren't they? They are absolutely unbelievable. There's so many fruit. They are so good. It's so much fun. The seeds are big. I admit the seeds are big, but they're fun to mess with anyway. But the fruit is absolutely delicious. Absolutely delicious and a fun thing to have. Let's see. Oh, Greg sent me some beautiful pictures too. I'll have to say these are some of the we've got pictures of really pretty flowers, really pretty butterflies, and really pretty fish. Those are about the best looking. Those are absolutely beautiful redfish spots, just absolutely gorgeous that Greg has. David sent me a picture, and David, I'd love to know that David made some persimmon jelly from persimmons a coworker gave him. He describes them as citrusy in flavor, so it makes it kind of an apple butter consistency, and make a good glaze on smoked duck. So all these things make me think of lots of things. First, David, I want to know: do you know what kind of persimmons? Some of us are keeping count on those kinds of things. And speaking of keeping count, Taxman has sent me the weight, the combined weight of all of his persimmons. He's got 20-ounce persimmons on his Tananashi. But I would love to know, Greg, David, what was the type of persimmon? Was it a native persimmon? It looks like probably, I'm just curious. And I'm also curious whether you use the skins. I'm just curious about a lot of things. So you need to, if you get a chance, let us know about that. I'll tell you something else about persimmons. And it's been a great persimmon year. I mean, we've eaten persimmons until we miss persimmons. Because now my persimmons are beginning to disappear. I wish I had a late variety persimmon. But I've got some of the hard persimmons like Fuyu. And they are, David talked about using a glaze, But one of the great things is if you're doing duck or pork is to cook the persimmon whole with it. Just slice the persimmon up. Even when they're hard, they are really great. They're perfect complement to those kinds of flavors. It's a beautiful thing. There are lots of things you can do with persimmons. Oh, there we go. We got to take another break. I don't know how we just run through these things so quickly.
I ain't gonna pick no peas.
Mm-hmm.
Because everything's gonna funny. You gotta get down on your bended knees. I ain't gonna dig no more taters. I decline. I ain't gonna pick no peas. Because everything's on the phone, you know you got to go. I'll get down on your bended knee.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Through the window, by the window.
I've noticed he comes
like
up.
Like lancing a wound, you know? Yeah, it's like.
He comes up every first hour.
Yeah. It's lancing a wound. That's what it is. And it just, you know, you got to do it. It hurts.
I'm a closet Tiny Tim fan. But don't tell anybody.
Yeah. So, oh, man. So, Dan. There it is. Nasturtiums. Finally, Dan says, finally, he's got a bloom. Mine are blooming too. And they're going to be blooming now like crazy. I love them. And of course, the blooms are great in salads. For those of you who have nasturtiums, what a great time of year for eating. I love, if you want to impress the fool out of people, make a salad and then sprinkle some nasturtium flowers on the top of it. And they go berserk. Well, first they're going to pick around it, and then you tell them, eat one of those flowers, and they eat it. And it is this unbelievable combination of sweetness and kind of a little pinch of heat, mustardy. It's hard to describe, but it is beautiful. It is a beautiful thing, these flowers. The leaves, I love the leaves too. They're just straight out. They got that nasturtium flavor, which I love. This really would make a great pesto just with nasturtium flowers, and maybe mixed with a little kale would make a great pesto. But the flowers are unbelievably good. David, thank you for calling.
Hey.
How are you?
You there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes. Hope my voice is okay. I got a little bit of a cold, but those were not native persimmons.
They were, yeah. And
it was about 3.5 pounds of, or about 7. I'm not sure what kind of persimmons they were. I'll send you a picture. Maybe you can identify them. But the recipe calls for pulling the top, is it the bloom off the top?
That's right. That's right. The at the bloom end, pulling that little calyx off, yeah.
Okay. So I basically cut off any of the bad-looking parts.
And you use the whole thing.
The whole seeds and put it in about 2 cups of water.
Yeah.
And boil it for about 10 minutes. Mush it up some because they're already pretty ripe.
Yeah.
And then after that, push it through a sieve and just collect the pulp and separate the skins and the seeds or pits.
Yeah.
And then... add back to that, I put it back in the pot and added three tablespoons of lemon juice and some dried pectin.
Yeah.
And then the only sugar you add to it is like a half a cup of honey.
Ooh, well, this sounds really good. I'm liking this recipe. This is really, I'm listening. I'm paying attention. You know, I'm writing this down in my head. Because this sounds like a really good way to deal with these persimmons. I one of the things I did was just to, this year I had so many persimmons and I wanted to share them and I had a bunch coming in at once. So what I did was I basically, I didn't even cook them.
Uh-huh.
I basically mashed them up, crushed them up, put them in a, and added some lemon juice to it. just a little lemon juice to keep them a little fresher, a little acidity to it, and didn't even add sugar, just put them in a container and put them in the refrigerator, and they kept pretty well. But but it's made me think, you know, there's lots of things I could be doing with these persimmons. So I think this so we're going to call this persimmon butter, which actually sounds really good. It sounds like you could use it on more things. Right. And I'm loving this idea. This is great. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, I eventually just put it in sterilized jars and processed it for about another 5 minutes. And I'm not sure with the sugar content if that's enough for it to how long it'll preserve like that. Because a lot of the jellies, I've got a part-time jelly company I'm doing here, and now I got to use a lot more sugar for the other type of fruit jellies. And so I'm just not sure if the natural sugar in the persimmon is enough to keep the shelf life good.
Well, the sugar content, and this is a very interesting question, because the sugar content of persimmons is very high compared to a lot of fruits. And so I don't know. I mean, you don't want to sugar them up too much because they are already, I mean,
oh, right.
In terms of sweetness, and this is people who don't like sweet probably don't like persimmons because persimmon, at least Japanese persimmons, are among the sweetest fruits you'll ever eat. They just have a huge boom natural sweetness. Native persimmons, too, are very sweet. I mean, I think they're the sweetest of all the wild fruits, but they're a little less sweet. And I might feel like I needed to add sugar to them, but I think you probably got it right. It'll be interesting to see. That's an interesting question. So do you have to look at – do you look at Brix ratios or things like that when you determine whether to add sugar, or are you just kind of
– I just go off of approved recipes.
Right, right.
So I haven't really done anything, and just do the old jelly test to make sure it sets up.
Yeah,
but that's like I said. This was not this is out of my friend John Foles' cookbook, and so I don't know how. I mean, it's good. Like I said, it's enough sugar in it, taste wise, but I just don't know if it's enough. Like you said, for ensure proper preservation.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is – well, it's beautiful. And, I you know, if some of you can go to Flickr on our webpage and you can go to our Flickr site where we have these things posted, you go under my show and you can look on there and you can go to the Flickr site. And these pictures are posted. These are beautiful jellies Dave has done, and they're just absolutely beautiful. So, David, tell me, how are the melatonins? Are they still producing?
They're still producing. They're a little slower than I would like as my – pictures come up on Facebook that remind me of things I've posted in the past. I'm not seeing quite as much as I had a couple years ago, but I counted the other day. I've already picked two small ones, and I look like I've got at least another dozen that are maturing out there. So I'm hoping now that the weather's kind of getting cooler, maybe that'll help things. But I got tons of female flowers, and I'm not seeing quite as many male, but I know they're out there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, hey, David, it's always good to keep up with you and to hear what you're doing. Those are beautiful jellies.
All right, yeah. I don't know if there's any persimmon still left out there. I'd be happy to make some more. I just need to get a source.
Well, I've got a few left on my Fool You, so I think people do. You know, there's a lot of varieties to persimmons, and some don't start producing until late. I wish I had gotten some of them years ago. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to go try to find them. Some don't start coming in until November, December, and they're not widely sold because – obviously, they don't work well where most of America lives. But down here on the Gulf Coast, they work just beautifully. And I'm going to try to get some of those varieties. They're really great varieties coming in that begin maturing very late. So some people may have some that mature very late. You know, maybe we'll hear from some of those folks as the show goes on.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. Thanks, David.
Thanks, Bill.
Hey, we got to take a break here. Sam, Sam sent me a picture of a flower that I get quite a lot. I see it quite a lot because it spreads around like wildfire and people are always giving it away. And the reason they're always giving it away is because it spreads like wildfire. Just a warning, Sam. It's hard to control, very hard to control. That's why you have some of it. But that's a clerodendron. I'll have to think of the species name, but it's a type of clerodendron. Some people call it cashmere bouquet, which is, I think, kind of a sarcastic comment on the odor. If you look at it, if you smell it, it has a very distinctive and not entirely pleasant odor, but it has very pretty flowers, which are very attractive. It's one of those plants that has managed to insinuate itself into our good graces, even though it spreads like wildfire once you put it out. Clerodendron, I'm going to think of the species name when we come back. There you go, David. Sam, excuse me.
My girl don't lie to me.